the words and sign our names. A Stargate Atlantis fanfiction. Written and read by Winter Creek. This has to be the craziest thing John's ever done. It's not as though he has a great track record with these things, and it's not like Rodney does either. They're on leave from the mountain for 48 hours, of which John expected to spend 4 on the golf course, 8 eating, and the remaining 36 engaged in various activities that do not involve wearing pants. Sleeping, sex, messing around on the internet, baiting Rodney. Rodney, predictably, has a different plan. Did you know that California is trying their hand at actual equality yet again? Rodney's bouncing on the balls of his feet, which never means a restful day is ahead. John murmurs, hoping to communicate that he's not really listening. And did you know that you don't have to be a California resident to get married there? Whose resident are you anyway? What's the last state you lived in? Rodney, what are you up to? Rodney flushes. Well, it's just that we could have gone to my country at any time, but it seemed more meaningful to do it in your country, fight the good fight and all that, and really, you do seem like such a California guy, so I suppose it's only fitting that... Rodney, what are you trying to say? John normally finds Rodney's babbling somewhere between charming and tolerable, but he's got a sinking feeling in his stomach this time that needs to be stopped. Rodney clears his throat and says, quietly, Well, I was wondering if you'd like to marry me? John stares at him. Since I'm in love with you and all, I thought it might make sense. He's plainly unnerved by John's silence, so he carries on, It's been years, John, years since DADT was ended, years of us. And I just thought, it's not that it'll change anything, really. We have all the paperwork in place, and Keller wouldn't dream of denying either of us visiting rights, and all of Atlantis knows, and frankly, we're both far too valuable to the SGC for anyone to raise a real stink. Rodney looks at his shoes, hands still at his sides, then meets John's eyes squarely. It's just that it would change everything, in the best way. John's set to argue. In his experience, marriage changes everything in the worst way, makes you stop trying, makes you roommates more than lovers, and turns the sniping mean. He tries to picture Rodney standing where Nancy used to in the kitchen, arms folded and eyes cold. He can't. Rodney would never stand there and stare him down. Rodney would shout and wave his arms and badger John into some sort of truth and then kiss him and call him ridiculous. Rodney can't ignore problems. He finds them, teases them out, fixes them. It's maybe not Rodney's fault that no one's ever fixed John before. Rodney's still waiting, and there's another difference, because all his hope and his fear is right out on his face. He's not pushing with it. He's just so honest about this that it hurts. John sighs and shakes his head and says softly, "And what if it doesn't work?" "It will work. How many times have I saved us all from utter disaster just under the clock? How often do you make me work my ass off to stop the city from blowing up, to get a ship working, to build an atomic bomb? After all that, John, how could I not make this work too? You think you're going to ask me for something I can't give, but I give you the impossible every time you ask." "It's true. It's all true." "What about me? What if I can't give you the impossible?" Rodney cuffs him lightly on the back of the head. "I'll make you. Even if we had a heterosexual, societally normed relationship, we'd still have only a 50-50 chance of success, statistically. But I'd like to remind you that I beat the odds almost every time. Look, I wish we had more time to stand here and indulge your insecurities, but our flight for San Francisco leaves in 3 hours. Grab your bag. We'll argue on the plane." It's really done from the moment John takes his ticket from Rodney's hand. Rodney wins, of course, which comforts John more than it should, but leaves him feeling dazed as they walk up the steps of San Francisco's City Hall. He guesses that this isn't so different from all the other times he stood up uncomfortably for what's really important. Saying no to Rodney would have been like leaving someone behind. Leaving Rodney behind, because it was clear from the moment he asked that there was no going back from here. Rodney's made them an appointment with a justice using the clerk's office website. "Of course you did. It's the most sensible thing I've seen yet. Very efficient." And the marriage license can be paid for with a debit card, thank God, because neither of them have any Earth cash. John's gripped by doubt as he writes down the ending date of his previous marriage, but Rodney's hand is warm on the small of his back. Later, John won't remember anything that was said. He'll remember that he almost dropped the pen signing the damn license, that Rodney's kiss at the end of it all rocked him back on his heels. He'll remember watching Rodney smirk and pull a pair of rings from his pocket, John's perfectly sized. I measured your finger while you were sleeping. What? He'll remember thinking that Rodney's right, that this doesn't change anything, except that it changes everything. He'll think that this moment, this decision, this look in Rodney's eyes, this dopey smile on his face, these are the things he'll get to keep, no matter what comes. There is no golf involved in John's leave, but there are 6 hours of eating, 1 hour of wedding, 10 hours of traveling, not a lot of sleep, one awkward but happy phone call to Jeannie, half an hour of debate over whether to call Dave, no, but maybe later. Way too much time spent sending emails to everyone Rodney's ever wanted to spite with the hotness of his trophy spouse, and a lot of honeymoon sex. They spend most of it without pants. On their first mission back, another beautiful chieftain's daughter hangs herself on John's arm and smiles winningly, and John gets to say, "Hey, let me introduce you to my husband." 5 missions into their marriage, Rodney's called back to Earth to consult on something. When he's shot in the leg, John thanks every deity he's ever heard of as he shoves his spousal visitation rights in the face of the SGC's medical wing and sleeps folded over, half in an unforgiving guest chair and half on Rodney's bed. 3 months later, they have their largest fight ever in the middle of the conference room. It may be their first married fight, but it still sounds just like them. On their first anniversary, John claims to have forgotten it. Really, he's just been paralyzed by gift-choosing indecision. And Rodney gives him a look and concludes, "Well, I guess you're giving me a blowjob, then." Later that night, John admits to Rodney that it's all been totally worth it. In the end, it's about deciding to take the chance.
10 years waiting for this moment of fate when we say the words and sign our names. If they take it away again someday, this beautiful thing won't change.
This fic was written in November of 2008 in response to Keith Olbermann's response to California's passage of Proposition 8. The title is taken from Vienna Tang's song City Hall, which also accompanies this fan fiction, a song written in response to the San Francisco same-sex marriages of February 2004. Where there's love, there's hope.
So, oh, me and my baby driving down to a hilly seaside town in the rainfall. Oh, 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 me and my baby stand in line. You never seen a sight so fine. There's the love that's gonna shine.
This has been Say the Words and Sign Our Names, written and read by Widget Green. You can find this and other fan fiction at community.livejournal.com/lightextends. Thank you for listening.
You've never seen a sight so fine as the love that's gonna shine at City Hall.